Is your business struggling? Do you need a custom business plan to get ahead? All you need to do is ask Sharifa, the premier business consultant who is focused on your success. From digital marketing to business planning, I bring over 25 years of experience to work for you. As a host of three different talk shows, I can get you connected to your audience right away. Visit AskSharifa.com for more information. Do not face the unknown alone. Good morning, good morning. Thank you for joining me on yet another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an incredible show for you today. You know, I love it when our guests are diverse. I mean, you know, talking to the same people every day, that might be interesting for some people, but I love to learn. And today's guest have unique industries that they're going to share with you. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. There's someone that you know, maybe they're in your house, maybe it's a coworker, someone wants to start their entrepreneurial journey, and they need this information. So, but they won't have this information unless you go ahead and share the show with them. So while you're grabbing your notepad, grabbing your recorder, grab a friend, because as I always say, friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're introducing the show to your friends, I'm going to introduce our very first guest, Mrs. Aisha El Hajjar. She is a midwife, author, and founder of Amani Birth, an international evidence-based Islamically founded childbirth education and doula training organization. She is a mother of eight and passionate about families' rights in childbirth. Good morning, Aisha. How are you?
Good morning, and thank you so much for the introduction and for your energy and your wisdom to bring this kind of a platform out to the community. I really love what you've done.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for that. I was impressed when you said, I'm going to have a voice, and you started a roundtable. That's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah, so just to introduce myself, I am your typical American, grew up, you know, in the U.S., and I converted to Islam in my mid-30s, and prior to that, had five children, and then I moved overseas. And when I moved overseas, I found that the childbirth, I guess, knowledge and rights were not the same, and I was astounded by what I found. And I was also a bit disturbed because I was a new Muslim, and as a Muslim, you know, we believe that Allah created all things, and if Allah created all things, He created women to conceive, carry, birth, and feed their babies. But yet, you know, there was so much intervention happening in birth world, you know, all around the world. But particularly overseas, women didn't even know they had any other options. And so I immediately felt privileged to be American because I grew up in a time and a place where you get pregnant, you take childbirth classes, you learn your options, you have conversations with your doctors, you don't like their ideals, you switch to another doctor. And I found myself in a place where, you know, doctor shopping was shameful and questioning, you know, having any of your own ideas or questions about how you were going to give birth to your baby was, you know, arrogant and, you know, just not accepted. And I thought that, you know, women are getting basically, you know, all these interventions they didn't need, you know, including the C-section and everything up to that. And I felt heartbroken because I thought if anybody should be trusting the normal process of birth, shouldn't it be believing people that believe that, you know, God created us to do this. Why would we think that we have to have our vagina cut open to get a baby out of it? You know, so I set off on a mission of education, and that began with me getting my own. I had to go back to school. I'm in my 30s. I had, you know, by the time I did this, I had eight kids. And so I went back to school, got my bachelor's and master's in midwifery, and wrote an Islamically backed childbirth education program, something that speaks to the people of my religion because, you know, it's different. It's different for Muslims than it is for non-Muslims in the sense that, you know, we have a very strong faith in God, but we also have a very strong aversion from unnecessary mixing and things that happen in a typical American childbirth education class. And so I wrote an Islamically based program and began promoting it. And here we are, gosh, what are we, 8-9 years later, and we're in, you know, close to 30 countries, and we have women all over the world that are teaching childbirth and serving as doulas, and I haven't focused much in the States. This year I've decided we're gonna start focusing on the States, but I have a lot of presence overseas, and I work with doctors and hospitals and train their staff about you know, what it is to provide respectful maternity care, to let go of some of the things that they learn in medical school, some of the interventions, because unfortunately, unbeknownst to many medical workers, especially the, you know, the further away you get from epicenters of the world, they get taught things like episiotomy and think that every mother has to have her vagina cut to get her baby out because that's what someone taught them. And they lose sight of the fact that most births go fine if we leave them alone and if we learn how to support them. And mothers lose sight of the fact that you don't need to be drugged to give birth. There's a time and place for every intervention and for every drug, but that if you get prepared and you go into birth with knowledge and you know, that preparation, most of us, birth can be a very empowering event. But unfortunately, birth is on the spectrum from traumatic to empowering. Nobody lands in the middle. You either had an empowering experience or you had a traumatic one. And I would say that the majority of women are landing in trauma, and that's not right. And that's not fair to our generations. And it affects our children forever. It affects the mother forever, who she is as a woman. And therefore, going forth, it affects our communities. So my mission in the world is to bring knowledge around the childbirth choices, around childbirth preparation, so that women can have intelligent conversations with their care providers and can have the autonomy of voice, which I love that you're bringing voice to your community or to the community at large. So I'm giving voice to these women so that, you know, they can go forth and know their rights, because we don't know your rights, you have none. Know their rights and then speak up for their rights and work for them. So that's me in a nutshell, who I am. And I am located in the US, but I was in Saudi Arabia for many years prior to this.
Wow, I'm learning a lot, and I definitely have more questions for you, but I am going to come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Craig Fowler. Craig is the founder and CEO of JoyGage, an engagement on-demand subscription service made for persons living with Alzheimer's and dementia. He was guided and inspired by his caregiving journey, supporting his father, who was the primary caregiver for his mother, who lived with early onset dementia for more than 10 years. Mm-hmm. Good morning, Craig. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well, Sharifa. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show, and thanks for all that you do.
You're welcome. It's the pleasure.
So my story, I've been in technology and tech startups for a long time. I was one of the early people at Vistaprint and was there from a time where it was 20 something people until it was around 8,000 people. And since then, I've been working with growing tech startups. And a little over a year ago, I decided that I really wanted to focus on people with dementia. My mother passed away a few years back after having early onset dementia throughout her 60s into her mid 70s. And I realized that we're in a world where people tend to think of technology as being something that applies to younger people and to individuals who we in our mind think of as being tech savvy. But in the last few years, and especially during the COVID-19, we've realized so many older people have been able to use technology. And it's actually been a godsend to so many people who have been homebound. And I've realized, particularly with when you look at people who are living with dementia, there's actually some different needs where technology can really help more than I think almost anyone else in the population. As an example, with my mom, who's pretty typical of someone with dementia, she at some point stopped going to church. She stopped watching movies and television the same way that she used to do. She stopped taking part in a lot of activities because mentally, she didn't have the same cognitive ability to remember what was going on, to, for example, keep track of a plot in a movie. She lost a lot of her confidence when she was outside taking part in activities and became embarrassed. And like many people with dementia do, she really kind of became more internal and checked out of many of the activities that she once enjoyed. And it's really tragic because people with dementia have more spare time and more free time on their hands that they should be able to be using to, they should use to enjoy themselves. But instead, what I found as I started interviewing hundreds of different people in similar situations, my mom's story was pretty common. People with dementia usually don't engage. The people caring for them have a very hard time keeping them engaged in activities. And so when we formed JoyGage, the concept is that we want to use technology to bring the world of options for people, the world of options for different ways to engage and entertain people, and actually use machine learning and AI technology to match that to each person living with dementia. We've realized everybody's different, and dementia and Alzheimer's disease are progressive. So an individual that might be able to play a certain game or take part in a certain activity today won't be able to necessarily do that same activity at the same level a year from now, or maybe even 2 months from now. And so from using technology, we're able to match people to activities in the world that are actually accessible to them and they can still enjoy. And, you know, it's been an interesting journey for the last year or so with, you know, COVID lockdowns, not being able to see many of the people we're trying to serve. Now that things are opening up more, it's just really a joy to be able to really work with individuals with dementia more hands-on. But our goal is, or our mission is really pretty simple. We simply want to have people with dementia have more of their daily time that they spend being enjoyable and engaging, so that they're just happier and that we see more smiles on their face. And at the same time, that also frees up some of the time for their caregivers, people like my father, who often have end up having their own health issues and problems because they spend so much time caring for someone with dementia. So, you know, to summarize, we're really focused on trying to use technology to help a group of people who really need help, who have been really, really underserved in the past.
Wow, I love it. Definitely have more questions for you, but I want to introduce my next guest, Dr. Teresa Cody. Prior to moving to Houston, Texas as a young teenager, Dr. Cody lived with her family in Brussels, Belgium. She earned her undergraduate degree at the University of Houston, then her Doctor of Dental Surgery at the University of Texas in Houston in 1992. The next year, she and her new husband, also a dentist, bought a practice in Sugar Land, Texas. They routinely use PRP therapy to promote healing after bone graft surgery. So she knew the platelet-rich plasma injections were effective. Dr. Cody, welcome. Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me. And this is going to be, I'm sorry, I do have a dog.
It's okay. If he comes in, I have questions for him.
Yeah. She'll lick you. That's what she does. She's the friendliest dog in the world. Yes, I am a dentist, and my husband as well. We've grown a practice over the last 30 years. I can't believe I'm saying that. It feels like just yesterday we bought the practice. So I have been fortunate that I have younger dentists working in my office. So I am doing other things. I got younger backs in there, you know. Does its toll on your body, repetitive motion does. But PRP can help. I'll tell you about that. So 2 years ago, I opened a wellness center, and we primarily use platelet-rich plasma. Now we have used it's the healing portion of your blood. So we have used that in dentistry for 30 years for bone grafts, like you said. But I had no idea what it was doing. We knew that if we didn't use it with a bone graft, you didn't get enough bone to put an implant in. So you didn't get a new tooth. So, but we put it in and 3 months later, put an implant in. So my hairdresser this is all her fault. She had a very hurt hand from being a hairdresser for a very long time. She could not make a fist. And, but if you can imagine, you cut hair and blow dry with that motion over and over and over all day long. So she had trigger fingers. So I'm sitting in her chair and she says to me, I think I'm going to have to get another steroid shot. My hand is killing me. And I said, okay, you can't do that. I don't know if you know this, but you can really only put steroids in an area 3 times. So I said, come into the office and we'll put platelet-rich plasma in. Well, she did, because we've been friends for over 20 years. And so she asked me, how long before I see something? And I said, I don't know, 6 weeks. So we injected the hurt areas. And she sends me a picture the next day. Her index finger is touching her thumb. And she couldn't do that the day before. And then she sends me a text the next day and says, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to send you a picture this morning. And she made a fist, closed all her fingers down. And that's when I said, oh my gosh, I have got to figure out what this is. And that began my journey into platelet-rich plasma. And now, after that, then I opened the wellness center. And I have a nurse on staff, and I have an MD. And so we use it for aesthetics in what's been coined the vampire facial. And we use it for hurt areas like knees and shoulders and hips and tendons and ligaments and plantar fasciitis and Bell's palsy. So it's kind of a fun adventure I'm on.
Wow, it seems like it. But what stands out to me about this show that's so interesting is I say this all the time. You know, people say, Sharifa, you came up with a great show, a great idea. And all I say, it's only God, because I don't pick the shows or the date where the guests appear. The guests pick the date. Like, they select the date when they want to be on the show. And today, in some form of fashion, everybody is in the medical field. What they're talking about is somehow related. So I just want to put my disclaimer. I do not have a degree in any form of fashion. So if this conversation goes above my head, please bear with me in all the questions that I ask, because I just want to learn and I'm not a doctor. I want to go over to you for a moment, Aisha, and let's go back to your technique. And I just want to be clear on what exactly is it? Is it the process of childbirth? Is it what you don't do, or is it specific steps that you add to actually make the Mani technique?
Well, that's an interesting question. A lot of people think of childbirth education as a method or a technique, and we're more of a philosophy. Okay. And the philosophy is that every woman was created to conceive, carry, birth, and feed their child. And so we go back to, tying it back to the original creation of the biological function of a woman's body. Not to say that a woman is just a child bearer, but the biological purpose of a female body is to bring forth the next generation. And, you know, Allah created, or God created us all to do this, just as he created every other mammal to, you know, conceive, carry, birth, and feed their young. That's what we are as mammals. And, you know, we don't need to go out and, you know, deliver the animals in the woods, the deers, whatever, you know, they manage. Do we have complications that could benefit from interventions? Absolutely. But we've allowed the medical community mentality of fear-based childbirth to go to the point that we think every single birth has to have an intervention. Everybody's on an IV, everybody's taking a pain drug, everybody's having, you know, depending on where you live in the world, everybody's having their vagina cut open, if not their belly. We think that we can't tolerate the pain of labor. And I've had 8 kids, I'm telling you, childbirth is bearable. You just have to learn coping techniques. So we're teaching women, first of all, that they have a choice, they have to use their voice to express their choices, they have to have the education to know the choices, and then they have to have the voice to express their choices. And then they have to be physically, mentally, and spiritually prepared for this journey. You know, so we help women get prepared for the coping part that is childbirth, but it's all about, you know, the exercise, the nutrition, and the self-care that goes along with the entire pregnancy, labor, birth, and new motherhood journey. So we're there for that entire, I would call it childbearing year, bringing the family along. Your husband wants to be part of your birth process, he should be taking classes right alongside you, your mother, your auntie, whoever, everybody should be involved. And as much as possible, get me in front of doctors. I want to work with obstetricians, nurses, midwives, all around the world, wherever they are, if they're willing to listen. Because very often I get medical practitioners in my workshops or sessions, and they come out changed. So like, I had no idea. And they don't really recognize the emotional trauma bit of it that can come out of a childbirth. When things are done to you without your own involvement, when you're treated like a piece of meat laying on a table, and they forget that it's not just from the belly to the below the waistline. There's a whole woman, and she has a brain and emotions, and things are being done to her without her understanding of why, without her consent. That's when birth becomes traumatic. And so getting our care providers to be more cognizant of involving families in their own care. People are intelligent, you know, by nature. You don't have to have a degree, Sharifa. You just need to be able to speak the same language as I do. And we have our program, by the way, in like five different languages. So you just need to be able to, you know, speak the language that I speak so that we can have an intelligent conversation. And I trust that you're intelligent enough to understand and make decisions. And as a care provider, as a midwife, for example, I need to make sure that you understand you have choices A, B, and C. These are the benefits. These are the risks. I might prefer A as a midwife, maybe for my own selfish reasons, because it's easier for me perhaps, or whatever, but you get to choose and I will support you regardless if you choose what I, you know, asked you to do or not. And at the end of the day, that's kind of where the rubber, you know, hits the road. And a lot of our care providers want complacent patients. They want patients who do as I say, don't ask me questions, don't be a problem, just be a good girl. That doesn't make for an empowering birth at all. You know, that makes sense if I'm laying flat on my back having a C-section because I have a complication. That does not make sense in a normal life event. And that's what birth is a normal life event. So you know, let's support normal physiology and let's reserve interventions for when there's truly complications. Thank God we know how to intervene when there's a problem, but most births are not problems. And we're making problems where they don't exist is the issue.
No, that's interesting. Now, my kids are 24 and 27. I'm not having any more, but if I were, I would want you in the room. I may not know exactly what you do or how you gonna do it, but I would be like, Dr. Aisha is coming with me. She's staying with me. I just need her to hold my hand because your energy, your aura, your presence to me would just be so healing for the patient. Because when you're going through this traumatic experience, when you are afraid or, you know, you have fear and someone's not listening to you and taking your decisions or what you want into account, it could be very, very traumatic.
It can actually be deadly, to be honest. Knowledge is power, and having knowledge reduces fear. Fear can actually be deadly in the childbirth scenario, in any medical scenario, frankly. And we're working in a situation where very often our care providers are fearful of the actual process. You know, if you've got the person who's presiding over the process, fearing the process itself, you've got a problem. And then you have the patient who's unsure and doesn't know what's going on. They're fearful. Fear can actually derail the whole birth process and make it, you know, more traumatic, if not in some cases, even deadly. So it's really serious. And, you know, I'm sure, Sharifa, you know, we have an issue in our country. You know, all of us are in America. We have an issue in our country where, you know, Black women are losing their babies at a higher rate and their lives at a higher rate than white women. A lot of that boils down to fear and what's happening structurally in our system in this country and how we're treating women of color when they go into birth. And that's not right. Mm-hmm. Every woman deserves to come out of birth alive with a baby and it having an empowering experience. And it has to start with the women need the knowledge and the doctors need to be reacclimated to how to support a woman in birth. Because we're not teaching our doctors how to support women. We're teaching them how to, I don't know, I hate to say oppress, birth is in a state of oppression, you know, and this is not working. It's not working the way that we're doing it. And there's so much to be said for having doulas, for having educated parents. And, you know, there's a big push in you know, legislature right now. Every woman deserves a doula, and especially in the people of color communities. Every single person needs to have support. You deserve that. You're human right. And then we get COVID, and then we get COVID and we tell women you can't even have your husband in the room. Really? He slept in my bed with me last night. He can't be standing next to me when I give birth.
Right. You
know, he's going to be with me when I come home with the baby. Like if he's got COVID, like we're exposed already.
You know? Right. Right. Some of these decisions we make. I hear you, Aisha. Believe me, I've had this conversation before. I want to go over to Craig. Something that Aisha said with the whole aspect of, you know, people being afraid. I know when you're experiencing dementia and Alzheimer's, you can be very afraid, especially because you may not know what's real. You may have forgot your next thought. So when you start working with people, do you feel that getting past the fear is one of the first steps?
Absolutely. One of the biggest fears that we see is simply the fear of being honest about your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. There are many people who have a diagnosis of dementia who will not talk about it. They don't talk with their families. They don't even talk with their spouse. It's just almost a secret that no one wants to let out. And in reality, the best way to deal with the diagnosis of dementia is to actually be really accepting of it, to understand that you can have a great life for years and years and years with dementia, but you need to understand what that entails. And it's really important that the person with living with dementia and the people close to them all become really well educated about what they need to do moving forward. And so the fear, and it's really almost an avoidance, is really something that that stands out. You mentioned too the fear once you start having, once individuals living with dementia start having a couple of bad episodes where they go somewhere, can't remember where they're at, where they forget someone's name in an embarrassing situation, that often leads people living with dementia to start pulling back away from others and becoming less social, which is another problem because a number of studies have shown that when someone living with dementia is active, particularly socially active, with lots of friends, lots of daily interactions with other people, and they are just mentally active with activities they're taking part in, a number of studies have shown progression can actually slow, the actual mental activity is better. So someone will actually have a better life with dementia if they don't ignore their diagnosis, especially if they don't pull away from others and become more introverted. It's actually much better to kind of face the fear, so to speak, and to really, you know, fully accept where you're at and take all of the daily actions you can to make life better.
Mm-hmm. But let me ask you, because you keep saying the diagnosis, but too often I think we're afraid to go to the doctor for a lot of different mm-hmm. reasons. And we also don't know, you know, is this a symptom of this or is it just my imagination? Like for me, I'll tell you, and I'm honest, everybody knows that I'm 45, but I can tell you, I could walk into a room, get in that room, forget why I went in that room, have to leave the room. So I'm like, wait a minute. Then I go back. I'm like, oh, I came in here to do this. You know, I go somewhere, especially with these masks. I can't tell you how many times I've gotten out the car, gotten to the, you know, grocery store, to the door. I'm like, oh my God, I forgotten my mask, you know? So, but no one's come in and diagnosed me with anything. But how do you know when it's that time to go and get this diagnosis as opposed to, you know, maybe my mind's just, you know, on other things?
So it's a great question. So I'll actually use the example of my mother. My mother started having difficulties at work when she was, I think, around 61 years old. She actually retired early. My father and I started noticing changes in her around that time, but it was actually a year or two later when she had some mini strokes and TIAs that we actually took her and she was fully diagnosed. So even as a family, we were all in denial. And, you know, your question, you have a great question. So many people don't go and seek the actual diagnosis because they really are trying to avoid. It's really avoidance. No one wants to hear that they have dementia or Alzheimer's disease. And so many families will see something, but just, you know, I have a friend whose father was deep into dementia and he's a very educated, you know, wonderful person. His father is the same business owner. They waited until the father was really, you know, very far along before getting the official diagnosis, which again, it keeps you from getting the right advice, the right potential medical care, and from taking the right steps. But it's really that fear of there's a fear of the diagnosis. It's almost that just really freezes a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Cody, go ahead. I'm sorry, Craig.
No, go ahead.
I was just going over to Dr. Cody real quick. How you doing over there, Dr. Cody?
I'm good. I'm enjoying this conversation. I just wanted to say to Craig, do you find, my father just passed away in January with dementia.
Sorry to hear that. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, to tell you the truth, it's really grief, but it's relief because he had a lot of anxiety along with the dementia. And, you know, he hid it from us for a very long time. Like yes. He was very good at hiding it. And we didn't realize till later when we got into his business, how he wasn't keeping up with things. He was living in a senior apartment place. So, you know, he was kind of protected, But do you find that as well, that the person kind of hides it from the family as long as they can?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, Dr. Cody, that's something, what you just said, something I'm hearing a lot from various people, that it, and often individuals will tell me they only know someone has dementia when they start looking through the checking account, or they start looking through some of the bills, or and realize, well, this bill hasn't been paid in months, and this is someone that owned a business for 30 years. What, how can this possibly be? And it's, and in those cases, I think one of the big problems is stigma. And it could be, I know my mother, your father may have been like my mother, even when she had moderate to later stage dementia, did whatever she could to hide that from people. She didn't want anyone to know. And part of that is we have a very unfair stigma that someone with dementia is an inferior person. It's someone that doesn't have the same mental capabilities as us. It's someone that we need to care for, that needs to, we should handle with kid gloves, and we can't talk to them like someone else. And I feel deeply, a lot of us in this kind of dementia community are trying to break that stigma to say, hey, if you have dementia, like your father, my mother, they're people just like us. Everyone has a different mental capability. Everyone has different cognitive abilities, different beliefs, different physical abilities. And if society, I believe fundamentally, if society will start accepting people like our parents more openly, they'll be hopefully less less prone to try to hide that from everyone else.
Well, and your mother was probably highly intelligent, like my father. So that was, I think it was painful for him when he realized he could not keep up with what he could naturally do his whole life.
Yeah. It's tough. And that's one of the really tough things with dementia. For people who are natural caregivers, people who are very responsible, people who are really on their game all the time, it's really tough to accept that you're not going to have that same capability moving forward.
Yes. Right. Aisha, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm just listening to this conversation. And the first thing I want to ask you, Craig, you mentioned dementia and Alzheimer's. Is there a difference between the two, or just two different names of the same thing?
Yeah, it is. So dementia, Alzheimer's is one of the types of dementia. There's actually a number of different types of dementia, including frontotemporal dementia, vascular dementia, Alzheimer's disease. Often, you know, I'm part of the Alzheimer's Association. Often people will use Alzheimer's as kind of a blanket term. It really should be the other way around. Right. Dementia is really the blanket term. But because Alzheimer's disease is such a well-known term, it tends to be the one that, you know, for my company, if we do a social media post or anything, you've got to use that keyword because that's what people think of. But Alzheimer's is really just one, it's one of the more prominent, but just one of the types of dementia. And it specifically tends to be one that affects older people, that has the typical progression we often see where individuals will lose their short-term memory over a period of time and eventually start losing more cognitive abilities and even physical functions towards the end.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I know that it's a lot of strain on the family members when you're, you know, caring for someone, you care for your mother and your mother doesn't know who you are, or, you know, I know that can be very straining. And I've seen a couple of cases close to me over the years. And I'm really impressed that, you know, the work that you're doing is not only, you know, serving that person who is with the diagnosis, but also, like you said, you know, potentially engaging them in these things will free them up, free up the caregiver so that they can also tend to their own needs. I think that's really huge. I don't think people realize, if they've not seen it, just how much toll it takes on the family caregivers.
It is. And increasingly, I work with a number of home health agencies. You know, home care groups are so understaffed right now and can't find people to work that we're at almost a crisis mode where we have a lot of, you know, unpaid at-home caregivers who often are at their own breaking point of spending so much unpaid time caring for people. And there's not the same level of backup in the market to try to pay for caregivers to come in like there used to be. So it's anything we can do, Aisha, to help those wonderful caregivers have more time of their own. It's, you know, everything we can do really helps.
Absolutely. I know I know in the state that I'm in and some of the surrounding states, they will actually, there's actually programs that pay family caregivers to take care of clients like these. I call pregnant mothers clients instead of patients. So, you know, but to take care of these clients, they will actually pay. Like if I have to be a primary caregiver for my mother, I can actually apply to one of these organizations like Easter Seals, and they will actually hire me to take care of my own mother. Do you see that statewide across the states, or is that just something I'm seeing here locally where I'm at?
So there, every state's different. There's a number of, you know, organizations who are really working to try to get that to be more of the norm. It's not the norm across the country, but it's certainly something that would be wonderful. The amount of unpaid, I think the last stats I've seen, there's over well over $100 billion wow. of unpaid care given to people with Alzheimer's and dementia every year. And to think of all the different small businesses and different things that could be started by the people who, like my father, who spent, you know, as my mother got into the moderate to later stages of dementia, keeping care of her was a full-time job. And that's something I think we undervalue as a society.
Absolutely. Dr. Cody, what types of people do you work with? Who do you treat?
Well, just we treat everyone, but I just wanted to throw this in. This is an interesting, okay, my husband and I, we have a child with Down syndrome. Well, he's not a child. He's 23. And
he's still your baby.
Well, I have a 27-year-old as well. So, but I'm a lot older than you. many people don't realize that people with Down syndrome, they get Alzheimer's. And they get it early because they have a triplicate of the 21st chromosome. And on that chromosome is one of the genes involved with Alzheimer's. It's called APP. So I have, since he was born, been working on developing medicines to help him, and developed the whole protocol, and that's a whole nother lifetime away, and I made a documentary and all that. But anyway, so a couple of years ago, when I started working with PRP, I started thinking, how do I get into the brain? Because I'm always, you know, I know that his older sister will take care of him, but it's your own plasma, right? So there's no chance that it can hurt you. It's already in your body. So what we're doing with the plasma is we're taking all the healing factors, because that's how your body heals. If you skin your knee, it's the plasma that makes the clot, makes the scab, makes the new skin. It does everything under there. That's why we like it for aesthetics, because it gives us more collagen, you know, as our skin is falling. So I was thinking about it and I thought, I know a way into the brain. People do drugs, they snort it up their nose. So I made a nasal spray with his own plasma that we've been using for about 2 years. We've taken some time off. And his sister is like, what are you doing? He's a lot better. Down syndrome have a lot of OCD behaviors, so they can get caught staying by themselves. People don't really realize that. So he's much more social and having better conversations. And I'm not saying it can stop dementia. This was just a personal experiment. So, but I have used it with other head injury patients. They're mainly friends who had head injuries. So interesting, huh?
Very interesting.
This conversation. I wrote a book, which I'll just promote real fast. And it's called You Healing You. And the only reason I wrote it is because I've watched miracle after miracle happen with the platelet-rich plasma. And an interesting, I don't usually talk about, I didn't write that in the book about the nasal spray. And, so that's interesting. You see, because we can freeze the PRP, and then thaw it out and keep it in the fridge. So that's why you can freeze blood products. That's how they keep them.
That's very interesting. Craig, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I think that's real. I think that's really interesting. There's so much research going on right now on Alzheimer's and brain. I mean, it's you know, one of the fortunate things is we've got a lot of an increase. We had lots of funding increases for research, but it's still such an unknown area. We still just don't understand the brain. It's just exciting to me to hear what you're trying out. There's so many, I think, Dr. Kadu, there's so much unknowns. I think the more we can try and learn, the better. But I do have one question, Dr. Kudi. I'm fascinated by what you're doing with the PR. With the PRP, are there certain injuries or certain areas of the body, like in the knees or something, where that you see where you get where it's just really, really effective, or where you're seeing, you know, a large percentage of your people coming in to get treated?
Yes. And yes, every treatment has worked. You get improvement. The best is so I'll tell you where this is used a lot and for a long time. Okay. So I live on 4 acres and my neighbor has horses, and I went over there and I said, hey, I'm starting CNC Wellness, and we use platelet rich plasma, which most people don't really know what it is. She goes, oh, I know all about that. And I said, you do? And she said, oh yeah. For the last 15 years or so, this is the first line of treatment for a horse. Because ligaments and tendons, so they have very long ligaments and tendons. And, you know, if you can't get the horse to heal, you have to put it down, which is so sad. And so they've been using it for a long time. The other place that it's been used a lot is in professional sports. Because it helps, especially ligaments and tendons heal, but also muscles. So it relaxes muscles. I had a he's a semi-pro tennis player yesterday, and his shoulder's locking up. Well, it's because half the muscles are weaker than the other half. You know, he's overdeveloped his back muscles. So he came in for PRP because it will relax those muscles and let him relax enough to build the opposing muscle the physical therapist wants to build. Mm-hmm. So, you know, because he's overused that right shoulder, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of what we treat. And I can just tell you, my knees were kind of tweaky because I've been around for a little while. I've used them.
Yeah.
So I had my husband inject my left knee. And about 3 weeks later, I realized, oh, my right knee hurts. So I injected that, and now they both don't hurt. I didn't really have a diagnosis. I just had, you know.
Your knees just hurt.
Knees, yeah.
Just hurt.
Aisha, love to hear from you.
She says she's been around a while. I always say I'm an auntie who's been around the block a few times. So we're together on that one. Yeah, really interesting work that you're doing, Dr. Kudi. I really love that. And I was thinking about, you know, within my own family, we have a situation where there was a young man 30 years ago who was in a bad accident, a motor vehicle accident, and it's affected him for the rest of his life. And they've tried so many different things, and he's been to Belgium and Texas, in fact, when he was first in a coma for a long time. They shipped him to Texas for a while, and it's affected his ability to function in the world. And I'm just wondering, gosh, I wonder if what you've got is anything that could help in his situation. So it's really interesting. My husband's in the background. I'm like, oh, we need to get this lady's information. He's on his way to Texas, I believe, actually.
Well, there you go.
Man, he's a man now. He's, you know, he was like 16 when the accident happened. He's
right
30 years ago. So he's in his 40s, I suppose, now.
The brain is very redundant.
Yeah.
So you can.
Yeah, he had a brain injury. And some of the stuff that they've done has led to dystonia, you know, which is a trembling issue. And he's got a lot of stuff going on. So,
well, those are complicated.
Yeah,
the only thing I feel so good about the platelet rich plasma is it's your plasma.
Right.
Right.
I like that.
You're not putting anybody else's in. It's not a drug. And that's one of the reasons I think it's not very popular, is because
it's not a drug.
Pay for it.
Yeah. They say it's no money in the cure. You know, that's what I was thinking when you were speaking on why it isn't more popular.
Sharifa, or the prevention.
Yes, exactly. You know, they rather you have to pay for the medicine in order to get well. Now, one of the questions we asked you, Dr. Cody, was like one of the things that we treat, that you treat. And there's a Penny Brown Shannon who says, Dr. Cody treated me for hair loss. My hair has grown as much, so much since treatment. So it treats hair loss?
Oh, yes. Oh, I say we put it from head to toe. So it's really good, especially for female hair loss. It works in men as well. And so I've also treated plantar fasciitis. So that's the bottom of your foot. So the plantar fasciitis is kind of misnamed. It's not really inflammation. It's micro tears in your ligaments in your foot. So we put it in there and they heal up, and then it'll heal up new scars, not so much old scars, but new scars. If you get before 3 months, you will have, we treated a young man who was bit on his nose from his own dog. Aww. And it was a Z, it was horrible. And he told me he never realized how much this would bother him. And in 12 weeks, because he lived out of town, he only came for one treatment. But in 12 weeks, it was completely gone. Wow. Completely. So I was thinking about the episiotomies.
Yes.
Even if they had to do them, if they would inject this, they would heal up so fast.
Interesting.
They might do it around the world more than they would do it here in the States, to tell you the truth.
Perhaps, yeah.
All you need is to draw blood and have a centrifuge.
Interesting.
With
separate out.
It's just test tubes with anticoagulant in it.
Right.
Right.
Spin them.
So, yeah. Well, plasma's first job is to clot. Mm-hmm. So in the dental mm-hmm. office, my oral surgeon, he draws blood and he spins it to get a clot, and he puts the clot in the extraction site.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The healing on third molars, those wisdom teeth, easy, easy. They don't need to use any drugs anymore.
Wow. Aisha, have you seen this come up in your work?
Have
Me?
I seen anybody? Like the episiotomy and healing issues, you mean?
Have you seen the PRP come up in your work?
Never. Mm-mm. I don't know that. How common is this practice, Dr. Cody, around even the States, let alone around the world? Where did you pick it up from, and where is it being practiced?
Well, in dentistry, we used it for 30 years, so we know about it. I don't think people know exactly how good it is, but it's interesting because, you know, it's what God made, and guess what? It works.
Yep, exactly. You know?
Yeah.
They used to use it a lot more in orthopedics, but insurance decided not to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And somehow it's like what you're trying to do and educate people. These doctors don't offer things because the insurance doesn't pay, and maybe you want to pay for it.
Right.
They don't even offer it. So it's kind of been forgotten. I talked to a nurse in the operatory nurse, and she runs a big hospital, Methodist, and she said, oh yeah, we used to use it, but we don't use it anymore. They don't even want the doctors to offer it because they don't want to, they know that the insurance won't pay. And that education is, it's about the same as labor and delivery. They don't even offer you. My friend had a bunion surgery and the boot was killing her. You know, the big heavy boot they put on.
Yes.
And she said, don't you have anything else? And he said, well, we have this shoe. And she said, okay, I'll try the shoe. He said, oh, insurance won't pay for it. It was $22.
Oh my God.
Wow. Wow. Craig, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was going to ask Aisha. So I'm just curious, Aisha, do you find a lot of resistance? Because I know the people you're working with, they're going, I'm assuming, to regular medical clinics, hospitals, and doctors. Do you run afoul of many doctors and things with your teaching and your help?
Of course. I mean, there are those that are very open-minded, love them so much, and you know, you give them a bit of information and they're just all over it, soaking it up, and they actually adjust their practice and they change. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them cry on my shoulder. Literally, I've had doctors hug me and cry and say, I feel so bad. I had no idea what I was doing. You know, had the effect of what I was doing. I've had obstetricians come to me and cry over their own birth. Now that I've had your lessons, I realized the trauma of my own childbirth, and this person's an obstetrician herself. You know what I mean? But then you have the others that are, you know, they don't want to hear it, and you know, they do it their way. And you know, medicine is very patriarchal, and so when you start rocking the boat, sometimes you do get issues. And it's sad, and I can kind of understand it. Let's just talk about episiotomy for a minute. If you're an obstetrician, you know, of course we don't cut episiotomies as often in the States, but overseas, like almost 100% of first-time moms get cut in some countries. Mm-hmm. So if this is what you've been taught as an obstetrician and you've practiced that for 20, 30 years, and then you become a professor of obstetrics and you've taught it to the next generation, and then here this, you know, midwife from America comes and says you shouldn't be cutting episiotomies unless there's a damn good medical reason to do it, and you accept that and you change your practice, you also have to, if not outwardly, at least inwardly, accept all the women you've harmed over the course of your career and that you perpetuated out in the people that you train. It's a difficult pill to swallow. It's easier to go to your grave thinking you did the right thing, right? Yeah. Than it is to change and accept that you've harmed people over the years. And I remember doing a lecture in Egypt, and I remember probably a professor of obstetrics, maybe in his 50s or 60s, I had done a conference, and then we did a debate on episiotomy, and that was really interesting. At the end of the debate, he was actually sponsoring the debate. He stood up and he said, I just want to tell you that after listening to these ladies, because there's myself and some others that were speaking at that conference, after listening to these ladies over the past weekend, he said, I delivered a first-time mother last night, just before, you know, he got off like at 4 a.m. and then he came to this workshop. So he said, I just came from delivering a first-time mother over the night, and he said, for the first time in my life, I didn't cut her. And he turned around and looked at me, and he had tears streaming down his face. He had no idea a baby could come out without being cut. Because that's what he was taught, you know, 40 years ago, or however long ago when he started practicing, and that's what he's done to every woman in his practice. He had no idea you didn't have to cut the vagina. None. And he was just in tears. And so, you know, it's unfair. You know, who's suffering with this is the mothers, but it's unfair because we're not getting the right information to our care providers either. It starts in medical school and we're failing there. Unfortunately.
Well, praise God, you are making a difference, and you are, because that's enlightening to me. I wasn't even aware. So thank you. Now we are coming down to the last
one. Yeah, sorry. Breath.
No, it's okay. Definitely a drop in the bucket, but all of you are changing the world, and that's how all of you come together. That's why I love just having the opportunity to host this show, because it's incredible. All of you are doing something different in the medical industry, but you're enlightening and opening up to people to say, look at this industry, we need to make changes. So I think it's wonderful. And before I get on my soapbox, I just want to let you know that we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Craig.
Great. Well, first, I'd love anyone to find out more. You can look at Joy Gaghe, JoyGaghe. And it's at www.joygaghe.com. You can look at us on any social media site as well. And I'd love for anyone who knows someone living with dementia, or if you're living with dementia, to try out our service. You know, and overall, what I'd love for people to come away with is that when, you know, if there's someone in your life living with dementia, you think maybe living with dementia, be proactive. Think about all of the ways that you can help that person, or if you are living with dementia, that you yourself can live a vibrant and happy life for many, many years to come. There's so many options and so many things out there, and technology can really help. And I'd also just like all the people who are caregivers, who are working, who are, you know, caring for people with dementia. I'd just like to say a thank you. We love you. It's amazing the work that all the people do, especially the people who are unpaid caregivers. I just want to thank all of those as well.
Thank you, Greg. Dr. Cody, what do you have for us?
Well, I just want to thank you for having me on the show. I really appreciate it. This was so fun. I loved it. like I said, I have a book. It's called You Healing You by Dr. Teresa Cody, and you can get it on Amazon, of course. And I just wanted people to know that there are superior ways to heal, and you don't have to live with the pain of, you know, knees and hips and feet and loss of hair. You know, it's hard for a woman to not have hair. It's fantastic. It grows so fast. You should see her hairdresser was like, what did you do? But just so you know about platelet-rich plasma and that you have it, you're carrying it around, you're making it all the time, and it can help you heal in many, many ways.
And where can I find more information?
At cncwellness.com. It's my last name, Cody and Cashin, my husband's last name, cncwellness.com.
I love it. cncwellness.com. Have to check it out. Thank you, Dr. Cody. Aisha, what do you have for us?
Well, I just want to say that if you are a childbearing family, or if you are a person who's caring for childbearing families, you know, you're the grandmother, your children are going to have children, you have choices in childbirth, and not getting educated limits your choices. So whether you come to my program or whether you go to any of the other programs that are out there, do something, get educated, you know, find out what your options are, get yourself prepared. Amani Birth is an Islamically founded program, but we welcome people of all faiths. Birth is birth, regardless of religion. So we welcome whether people are Muslim or not, but it was definitely written with the Muslim family in mind. And our website is Amani Birth, AmaniBirth, AmaniBirth.com. We have online classes. We're, you know, international. We have people on the ground, you know, in about 30 different countries. So if, you know, childbirth is something that's in your future or in the future of people that you love, it's something that you really need to look into. It's so important that you go in knowing what your options are and, you know, you're able to advocate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So I see the Amani Birth for Fathers. Are there other books?
Yeah. We have the original. This is the, okay, I've got to put it right in front of me because I have that screened. Anyway, we have Amani Birth, which is what I would call the mother's book. It's 30 chapters. And then I wrote the father's book with my husband. This is like mom gets 30 chapters, dad gets 30 pages. So dad gets, mom reads chapter one, Craig's laughing. Mom reads chapter one, dad reads page one, bullet point fashion with lots of pictures. You know, that moms want all the details. Dads are like, just tell me what I got to know, you know?
Right.
And of course we have, you know, Arabic and Urdu and Bengali and different languages as well. And German, I can't remember what else. And then we have workbooks that, you know, we use that when we do like childbirth education, we have a workbook that the teachers will use with their students in various languages around the world. And then we have the online platform, which right now is running in English and Arabic, and it's coming up soon in Urdu and Indonesian and Bengali. So we have a lot of, in French, I believe. So a lot of different teams working on getting that in different languages. But of course, for the States, for the most part, you know, the English is definitely well-developed, as I wrote it originally in English. So
I like that. So if I read it quickly, because you were moving it, it says, for a blessed start in life.
Right. Amani Birth, assisting mothers for active, natural, instinctive birth for a blessed start in life. Right.
I like that, for a blessed start in life. I was raised Muslim, and one of the things that they do when the baby is born is they whisper the baby's name in the baby's ear. So that's the first thing that they hear. And so when I was born, my grandmother whispered Sharifa in my ear. And so Sharifa in Arabic means honest or of honor. So when you go to the town, if you needed wisdom, you needed guidance, you always went to the Sharif, or the right. Feminine is Sharifa, which is the root of sheriff. So it's a new sheriff in town, and I try to live by. So thank you. This has been an incredible show. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the show live does not mean we don't need your support, because we do. Please go ahead and share this show, whether you're watching it 2 days from now, 2 months from now, or 8 years from now. It doesn't matter. Please go ahead and share the show and support our guests. Our guests were here this morning to share their information, their journey, and they're all changing the world. So please support them. Their website link is in the Facebook post. Follow them on social media, reach out to them, send them a message. And when you do, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show, please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Struggling to increase your sales or website conversions? Are you looking for new ways to promote your business through social media or any other campaign? If yes, then you're at the right place. Ask Sharifa has 25 years of experience and the track record to guide you to success. From business planning to social media marketing, from website designing to website development, from search engine optimization to paid traffic, we will research your business, your products and/or services, and the competition to develop a custom growth strategy for your business. Contact us now, and we will help you bring your business growth to the next level. For more information, visit www.asksharifa.com.